This is Director Chris Rodriguez of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I want to welcome you to Season 2 of Intelligence Unclassified. This season, we are refocusing our episodes to better reflect NJOHSP's three core mission areas: counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. We'll be pulling both local and national experts in all these fields in an effort to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and to offer you a unique perspective on current homeland security trends and issues. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at NJOHSP and Facebook. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website, www.njhomelandsecurity.gov.
Welcome to Season 2 of Intelligence Unclassified. My name is Rosemary Martirana. I'm the Director of Intelligence here at the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. And with me in the room for Episode 1, I have several of our state's cybersecurity experts, to include our Chief Technology Officer, David Weinstein, our CISO, Steve Brannigan, who also oversees our cybersecurity division here at NJOHSP, and Mike Garrity, the director of New Jersey's Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Cell. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me here today to discuss a very important issue, and an issue that's been in the news a lot lately. So let's just start by what we're seeing floating around in the media, and that has to do with this Grizzly Step. So what exactly is Grizzly Step?
Morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Thanks.
So Grizzly Step is the joint analysis report that was published by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the FBI, and it details Russian malicious cyber activities, specifically the Russian intelligence services spear phishing campaigns targeting individuals who are members of the U.S. government, the corporate academic world, as well as political organizations, specifically the Democratic National Committee. It's significant because it's the first time that the federal government has really provided that level of technical detail for the general public, with the goal of providing network defenders all across the United States and the world, frankly, with information to either root out Russian activity already on their networks or prevent future attacks. And we can talk more about how helpful the information was in regards to both of those points. But I think it's significant nonetheless that the federal government took the step of releasing that information for the purpose of network defense.
So why now? Why are they releasing this report now? Are we setting a precedent moving forward?
I hope so. I think obviously there's been a whole lot of attention as it relates to Russian activity in regards to our election. Notably, and there's a bit of a misunderstanding here, the purpose of this report, this joint analysis report released by DHS and the FBI, was not to provide evidence of attribution. It was based on the assumption that that this was Russian activity. Instead, it was designed to provide network defenders with technical information that they need to enhance their network security. So in that respect, I think it sets a promising precedent because it signals that the federal government is willing to declassify intelligence for the broader benefit of the public.
Okay. So you mentioned, you know, we're going to start to see more of these reports released, which is good, so that network defenders can ensure the security of the networks throughout the United States. What else can we say about, you know, the actors behind this or the scope of these indicators that were released?
So one of the things that we can say is you know, within the joint analysis report, this details activities that were carried out by Russian civilian and military intelligence services. So it's not just one set of individuals; it's a broad scope, and it both in the the intelligence space, you know, individuals and military as well. Why it's exciting for us at the NJ KIC, I lead a team of individuals that are charged with sharing this type of information out with the citizens of New Jersey, with the businesses of New Jersey, with the entire community of cyber defenders in New Jersey. And for this unprecedented report to be made public is fantastic for us. It brings us all together. It provides people with information that they need to protect themselves. Now, we have a great relationship with DHS and the FBI. We share information regularly, but to share this publicly, and some of this information is recently unclassified. And so now individuals and companies and businesses and organizations have the ability to take that information that's being provided, search their own systems for them, but also defend against, attacks but using them.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you share information with DHS regularly, and you obviously receive information from the Department of Homeland Security regularly. How does that look in New Jersey?
So within the NJKIC, we've got, obviously three branches: operations, analysis, and partnerships. And so we partner with everybody, including DHS. But what happens is we receive technical indicators of compromise, threat intelligence, and other types of alerts from DHS daily on a regular basis. And we share that out with our members and the general public also on a daily basis. That may be through a mailing list that we have for the members of the NJKIC. That may be through an automated indicator sharing system, or it could be on the social media feeds. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and you'll see there's daily cyber tips up there or other alerts that we're publishing on a regular basis. Some of that information is prompted from information that we receive from DHS. Others is stuff that we uncover, here in the Garden State.
Good morning, Ro. Good morning, gentlemen.
One of the things that stood out to me with this report is it really helps to highlight the issue of those that are looking to collect information from other people's computing systems in a way where they're not normally seen. So I like to step back and look at it in an unscientific way, right, from my point of view, that there are two types of attacks. The cyber attacker that's looking to be noticed, and CryptoLocker is an example of that, right? I get onto your system, I infect and compromise your files, and then I want you to pay me money to decrypt them. Or what we're seeing with the Grizzly Step campaign is those who got into email systems and were able to monitor and extract emails and do it in a way where the person that was being invaded did not know. This is really highlighting that second one, right? And that's the value of information sharing. That's the value of what DHS has done. That's the value of the KIC, is bringing that information to people, letting them know these actors that are doing things where they're trying to hide, when we see them, when we find information about it, we can bring that to light and help people get better.
I think it's important to note, too, that this report from DHS and the FBI received a fair amount of criticism. In fact, a lot of criticism from the information security community. So let's address kind of the basis of that critique and discuss it. And you all can certainly weigh in. So a lot of the indicators of compromise contained in the report, and this is a fact, are relatively dated. The information has been collected over the length of the Grizzly Step campaign, which dates back to 2015. So the older an indicator, typically the less useful it is for network defenders. It's also worth noting that many of the indicators, and this is detailed in the report, represent nodes that are connected to legitimate activity. In other words, IP addresses, Tor exit nodes, for example, that have been co-opted unwitting to the user for the purpose of Russian operations. So on its face, for a network defender, you can't necessarily just take this information, for example, take an IP address and block it, because chances are you'd be blocking legitimate activity, right? And a lot of the criticism was focused on the lack of context surrounding the indicators of compromise, the age of the indicators, and the fact that many of them represent legitimate nodes on the internet. But I think that critique misses the point, right? And this gets to kind of the strategic value of this report.
I've said that what's more important is that the report was released, not necessarily so more important than the information contained in the report is that it was released in the first place. And that's because it signals a public policy shift in which the federal government, namely DHS and the FBI, is willing to be more transparent about publishing indicators of compromise for the purpose of intelligence. So there's a lot of responsibility, for the purpose of network defense. So there's a lot of responsibility on the part of the government to make sure that information is published in a swift manner, that it's vetted, that includes context. But there's also a lot of responsibility on the part of the consumer. And Mike, you've talked about this. The report contains a number of caveats noting that these indicators of compromise in many respects are associated with legitimate nodes at the internet. So for the purpose of managing expectations, consumers of this intelligence need to recognize that it's not necessarily designed to inform rule sets or firewall updates every time, but it's also designed to inform network defenders' broader thinking around security. So for example, and Steve and Mike and I have talked about this, the report revealed that the Russians were using Tor exit nodes. Tor is the onion router and anonymized proxy system to conduct their operations. Now, many professionals in the information security community have known for a long time that Tor exit nodes are a conduit for malicious activity. But I think I speak for Mike when I say that not all the NJKIC members know that. And if they read this report, they now have a really useful data point. And if they don't see a lot of legitimate activity coming to their business using Tor exit nodes, then it's feasible that they can make a business decision to block activity from Tor exit nodes, thus rendering Russian operations in this case ineffective against their infrastructure. So we need to look at this report from a couple different angles. I think the critiques, while honest, don't necessarily appreciate the strategic benefits of this report as it relates to information security.
So I'd like to follow that up. Dave talked about the strategic benefits, and I want to talk about more of the tactical as a consumer of the information, as a cyber defender of networks. And you know, when we get these reports, there was the PDF file that documented a bunch of this, and then there were CSVs and other files that were included with it. And the CSV file was basically all those indicators of compromise. And where does everybody go? To the back of the book to look at the ending, what happened. And those are those indicators of compromise. So many of the people that consumed them took those, ran them against the network, and found that there were many hits that, you know, their networks were, you know, connectivity to these IP addresses. And, you know, before jumping to the conclusion that you've been hacked or anything, a lot more information and investigation needs to be done. This is, and I've brought this analogy up before, it's similar, you know, as Dave mentioned, you know, where legitimate IP addresses or legitimate cube computers and servers were hijacked to carry out this campaign. Similarly, a car may be stolen and used to commit a bank robbery. And just because we can identify the owners of the car does not mean that those owners committed the bank robbery. There's more investigation that needs to be done. So we shouldn't jump to conclusions. Cybersecurity detective work is hard stuff, and it takes a lot. And it's so, I worry about those that take these and just run, because I've seen this happen time and time again. What was really important for me was the unsexy part of the report, and those were the mitigation strategies that were shared by DHS and the FBI. And there were seven, you know, top seven of them that they indicated would prevent approximately 85% of all cyber attacks and intrusions and stuff like that. It's kind of like your mother saying, you know, don't touch the stove. It's common sense information. None of this is groundbreaking. We've seen this before, patching operating systems and the like. but we still don't listen and we still don't do it. And just like that kid who's going to touch the stove and he's going to burn himself, he's going to learn the hard way. And so too everybody else is. So when we talk about cybersecurity, let's not focus on the sexy, you know, intrigue and chasing bad guys. Let's focus on doing good prevention so we don't have these types of attacks being, you know, compromising our systems.
And so I'd like to add to that, in reviewing the indicators of compromise that came out of the JAR, and you look at those IP addresses, to me, I realized those IP addresses were probably used at some point in the past. And if someone were to look to see activity now, it's not going to tell them anything. If they had really good logs and they could look back in time and they see some activity, it may or may not indicate that there was compromise because there might have been legitimate traffic. And that's exactly what this is, an indicator of compromise. It doesn't mean that there actually is one. It's something that if you see it, you want to look further. But as I went through that indicator of compromise, I will freely admit I learned something that I did not realize before, which is RTF files, which I thought in the past it's an RTF file. What could go wrong? You can embed some malicious content into an RTF file. So even an RTF file, just a not even a doc or a PDF anymore, but just an RTF file can, and in this case, did have some malicious code inside. So that was kind of eye-opening just to go through that and just to see that that can happen. And then as you go through and you look at this list and you see the different IP addresses, and we talked about the Tor exit nodes and how we can try to make intelligent decisions on that. The last piece I want to touch on in the indicators of compromise is they have something called checksums, MD5 sums or SHA-1 or maybe SHA-256. And I know there was some discussion on the lists about that, whichever one they choose. That to me is interesting because that can and may not be an indicator of compromise. It is possible to create a custom piece of malware specific for one target. And if I take that checksum, it might not be valid because somebody else might have gotten hit with a different one. So these are indicators of compromise. I'd ask people to look into that list to see what those items are and to really understand it as you run it. Just because you get a hit, it doesn't mean that your system has been hit. You really need to dig into it.
You know, another valuable piece of this report that doesn't get a whole lot of attention is that one of the reasons I suspect there hasn't been a whole lot of one of the reasons that when network defenders run these indicators against their systems and don't find anything is because long ago, meaning months ago at least, the Russian actors pulled their tools off of this infrastructure, right? Sophisticated cyber actors, particularly in a campaign like this, are always focused on protecting their intellectual property, which is defined by their tools and their access. So when you publish a report that is derived from classified indicators, meaning sensitive intelligence, you declassify it and you publish it for network defenders anywhere, that's a bad day for an attacker, right? It's especially bad if that attacker hadn't already removed their tool set or obfuscated their access points, because it burns their position.
Right.
And what that does is it changes the economics of the operation, right? Because every time that happens, hackers need to find another access point, another attack vector. And that's a good thing for network defense in general. So in this case, chances are the Russian actors had pulled off long before the report was released. But again, for future purposes, by setting a precedent and saying that we will publish this information and sacrifice whatever intelligence gain is associated with this information for operational benefits, aka network defense, sends a strong message to hackers, and in the long run, could alter the economics of attacking networks for malicious cyber actors.
So we talked about some of the indicators of compromise, but one of the things that we didn't talk about that was included in the report, and I think it's really important, it's the number one vector for compromises of accounts and is spear phishing or phishing emails. And this is the campaign that was carried out against the DNC. This is a campaign that's carried out every day. And you know, various reports indicate that 90% of all compromises start with a phishing email or a spear phishing email, which is an email that is forged. You're encouraged to open it because there's some urgency. You know, you need to change your password. You need to click on a link. You need to open a document that might be a bill that's overdue. And when you do that, your credentials are compromised. You may be, you change your password and you put your old password in, and now somebody has your password. So we see that all the time. And that's where, as I said, 90% of all these compromises come from. So it's not so much technical. It's more just social engineering, and we'll say it over and over again as a defender. Do not open emails that come from unsolicited individuals. Do not click on links in emails. Do not open attachments, especially if you're not expecting an attachment. And even if you are, you may want to call the person who sent it and ask them if they actually sent it, because some of these are so sophisticated that you're not going to be able to tell that it came from a criminal or it came from a trusted individual.
So to add to that, and Mike, I agree with everything you said in that, is that one of the things I didn't see in the jar, and maybe I missed it, was in the mitigation strategies, awareness was the one thing that I didn't see, which I think absolutely needs to be there as well, this whole discussion of talking about what an attack looks like. So just briefly, let me touch on this as I understood it. The attack, one of the vectors was, I believe one of the people at the DNC received an email saying you need to reset your Gmail password, to which he did, right? He clicked on it. He asked if it was okay. He actually asked somebody who said, yes, it's fine. Click on it. He clicked on it, entered the password, and that was then actually forwarded to Gmail so that new password was being used to access the site going forward, and it also was now compromised, right? And that's what those attacks look like, and that's what people should understand. That's how they look. If you receive an email asking you to change your password, be very suspicious. Anything where it's received what we call unsolicited, be very suspicious about that. That usually means someone's trying to get something. And that's difficult for us because many of us are trusting, right? That's how we got to where we are as a society. But sometimes you have to be careful of who you trust.
That's a good point. So let's just talk resources quickly for our listeners. Where can they access the report? Where can they find additional information on how to better secure themselves and their employees and their businesses?
So a number of different places where they can access it, from DHS's website, dhs.gov, from the U.S. CERT, if they want to get it there. They can also come to cyber.nj.gov, which is the NJ Kicks website. We've published two updates on Grizzly Step in our bulletins the past couple of weeks. We have the information there. We encourage everybody to visit our site, follow us on Facebook and Twitter. If they have questions, they can contact us 24 hours a day if they want. There's a number and email addresses published on the website. And we've been advising various organizations on how they should be responding to Grizzly Step. So we welcome those phone calls and emails, and we'll do everything to help you defend your networks, because that's essentially what our job is in the state of New Jersey.
Great. Thank you. Any closing comments, gentlemen?
No, I just think it's important to continue to promote information sharing in the interest of public awareness. And you talk about awareness being a key part of this. At the end of the day, these reports educate the public on a technical level and a non-technical level about how to better protect systems from malicious cyber activity, whether it's from a state actor or a non-state actor. I hope we can continue moving forward, and I hope state and federal institutions like the NJKIC and like the NKIC, the National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center down at DHS, can continue to play in this space.
Last thing I want to end with is, you know, we talked about DHS and the FBI and the NJ-KIC sharing information out with our members and partners and citizens. We'd like our members, partners, and citizens to share information with us. Have they received phishing emails? We want to know about it. They're not the only ones getting them. Has an attack been made against them? They're probably not the only ones. And if we can collect that information, we can help others defend against it as well. So again, that sharing of information is really important and vital for us to protect ourselves going forward.
Yeah, sharing and awareness really are going to be critical components in helping us get a handle on improving our cybersecurity.
Excellent. Well, Dave, Mike, Steve, thank you all for joining us here today, and we look forward to hearing from each of you in the future.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, I just want to preview what's going to be coming up over the next several weeks. And that has to do with the release of our annual threat assessment. And subsequently thereafter, we'll be featuring several podcasts detailing additional information and insights behind the threat assessment. And that'll be with our intelligence analysts here at NJOHSP. And we look forward to you all joining us.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.